When I was younger, I enjoyed driving cars fast. I don't know if any of you ever enjoyed that. I really enjoyed driving fast cars, and I enjoyed driving them fast. And as I've gotten older, and gas has gotten more expensive, I now end up driving for mileage. Do you know what I'm talking about when I say that? That you end up driving so that you actually extend your the fill-ups between between fill-ups as far as you possibly can. And I feel like when I actually can fill up every 2 weeks at about the same time, I feel like it's a major victory. But as I've been trying to drive for mileage, I actually have a 2012 Ford Escape, and it has a V6 engine in it, which is not particularly good on gas. And so I realized that over time, the secret with this particular car, it all has to do with the RPMs. That is the revolutions per minute. And so, on a tachometer on a car, it'll give you your revolutions per minute. Some of your cars don't have that, but most do, that your revolutions per minute. And in that, I found that if I can keep my RPMs between 1,500 and 2,000 RPMs, I get the best gas mileage I can. I can get above 20. Woohoo! You know, some of you have got Priuses and things like that that get, I don't know, a gazillion miles a gallon. But this car doesn't do that. And so I have to actually finesse it. And so I will drive, consciously at some points in time, and I'll watch the trip computer on my car tracking my mileage, and I'll see it tracking around 24 to 26 miles a gallon, which on a V6 is pretty good. And then at other times, I'll see it track between 14 and 18 miles a gallon, which is, sad face, kind of a thing. And I work at it, but I realize that if I want to get good mileage with my car, that I'm going to have to manage the RPMs. And what's interesting to me is that if I don't manage the RPMs, low mileage, if I do manage them, high mileage, and I realize that that's like life as well. When we're talking about rest, we're talking about this very same thing. We're talking about a high rev kind of a life, a revving, furiously busy life, an anxious life. The pace of life is furious. You make all kinds of commitments and all kinds of kinds and different amounts of commitments. You invest in all kinds of things. But if we don't actually manage those things, we will poop out. We will sometimes seize up. And some of our lives are physical manifestations of simply not taking care of the work-rest balance that God has built us for. A work-rest rhythm, a work-rest balance. That God has built us this way, and if we don't attend to those things, we will break down. It's a guarantee. There's a book out that I think is a really curious title, The Body Always Wins. But that is how it works. If you violate the work-rest balance over a long period of time, your body will win, that you will break down. And so what we're trying to do with this series is to look at the dynamics that it takes to actually come not just into a completely restful life, because that's not even realistic, but the Lord says you need to have a work-rest balance. And so he actually set up 1/7 of the human being's time to be spent at rest. And we don't pay attention to that to our own peril. And so this morning what I want to talk to you about quite simply is RPM management. That is to say that we need to manage our internal freneticism, if you will, our speed, our stress, our pace, and our space of life. And then we need to learn how to enter into the rest that Jesus offers. And we're going to do that by looking at two women, curiously, in the Gospel of Luke. But first, by way of reiteration, we started this series off with the idea of Sabbath. That is that for you, by design, from your Maker, 1/7 of your life is supposed to be spent at rest. 1/7. So you need a rest day. You need a day of rest. You need to spend significant, concerted time at rest. We also talked, secondly, about that Jesus offers us rest within and rest from religious demands. He says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. And he offers that to us. He also, we looked at the last 2 weeks at this, the rest that God gives us through forgiveness and through forgiving, that we find a sense of rest and a peace and a tranquility, if you will, of soul when we actually receive God's forgiveness by confessing our sins regularly and forgiving others regularly. And then last week, Reggie addressed this idea of being at peace and at rest in reconciled relationships, that when our relationships are not well, that when people are cross with us or we with them and those relationships are broken, we can never really rest, even if we carve the time and the space out for it. But I want to come back this morning to this idea of this internal sense of rest, this slowness inside. There's lots of different titles I could use for this. I like A Tale of Two Sisters, but I also like A Tale of Two Speeds, because that's what we're looking at in two particular women. One's name is Mary and the other's name is Martha. And we'll pick this up at the end of chapter 10 of Luke's gospel at verse 38. It says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all of the preparations that had to be made. So it's really interesting that this story made it into Luke's gospel. I don't know if you ever ask these questions, but I often look at these things. I think, Luke, why this story? Why underneath the inspiration of the Spirit, why this story? What is it about these two women that is so profound? Well, the story actually is a study in contrast, if you will. You have the heavily work-oriented sister, and you have the peaceful sister, and you have these as two expressions of faith that are being contrasted here. And what's interesting in Luke's gospel, and really in all the gospels, Jesus is the hero, but in this story, there really is no hero. There's a contrast and a lens that's focused on these two women and Jesus' response to them. Very interesting. And so it starts off really well. It starts off with Martha, Jesus coming through town, and Jesus and Martha invites Jesus, welcomes him into her home. This is actually very, very consistent with Middle Eastern hospitality, but she welcomes Jesus and the entourage that's coming with him into her home. And that makes me ask, firstly, you know, what is the... This is actually one of the things that the gospel actually describes as how we manifest faith. That we invite Jesus into our homes, our physical spaces. And she invites Jesus in, but this is actually kind of a picture of what authentic faith looks like throughout the Gospels. It's actually sort of encapsulated well in Revelation chapter 3, where it says, remember, Jesus says, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone opens the door, if hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and we'll share a meal together as friends. That's what he says, that this is an expression of faith. And beautifully enough, that's actually a passage in Revelation that's written to believers, that you and I have this opportunity to welcome Jesus into our family, into our home, physically, into our hearts, into our lives. And this is something that we do continually. It's not something that's just a one and done. It is something that is a practice that all of us are invited to participate in. So Martha welcomes Jesus. The second thing, the feature here, if you will, is that Jesus is present. He's actually there. Now, imagine that for a second. We've got a working family, just a run-of-the-mill, normal Joe kind of family, and Jesus comes to dinner. This is the dignitary of all dignitaries of all time. This is like having Queen Elizabeth just pop by your house and say, oh, may we have some dinner together? And interestingly enough, if the queen pops by and says she wants to have dinner at your house with you, unannounced, it's going to create a little bit of stress, don't you think? Because you're probably not going to just pull out your whatever you've got in the cabinet. You're going to, you know, what's happening? This is going to be a disaster. I know this is going to be a disaster. And so this is what's going on inside of Martha. But we see here the lens focusing on two women. Mary responds to this whole invitation in a curious way. Mary chooses a slower, thoughtful, reflective, listening, restful sort of engagement with Jesus. Martha, on the other hand, she reacts on instinct. She's active. She's anxious. She's hurried. She's distracted. She's very busy. She's doing what comes naturally to her. And interestingly enough, in this whole scene, what is inside of her is now on public display. It's coming out. It's oozing out of her. And so that's the start of the story. And it says she came to Jesus after she's busy fighting herself. She came to Jesus and asked him, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Now, let's drill down into this just a little bit more. Picture this. You've got Mary and Martha and probably Lazarus, their brother. He's there. You've got Jesus and, oh, and 12, at least 12 other guests. So this is not a trivial kind of a dinner party. And you've got no advance notice. And this is a hospitality nightmare. Especially in the Middle East where hospitality is everything. Interestingly enough, Mary chooses to sit down with the guest. I wonder what Jesus is going to say. This is great. I got a good seat. I got a front row seat. Martha, she's amping and amping and amping up. And in her heating up, she's like, I got to get this right. It's Jesus. This would be an epic fail of a biblical proportions, literally here. I can't afford that. And Mary, you're sitting? Seriously? This isn't fair. I mean, we've all been in places where people have been working really hard and we've looked on and thought, wow, this is great to have people serving us. You know, that's great. But the people that are serving in this particular case are not so good with that. Martha is busy. She's an American. She's very much an American. Her schedule is packed. She's shoehorned too many things in. Perfectionism is sort of poking through. Her blood pressure is rising. And at her peak, she seethes at Jesus. Lord, fix it. Tell my sister what to do. It's really interesting that in the midst of all this, she gets bossy with the master himself. And what's interesting to me is her phrase. Because in her busyness, she actually misses that Jesus is there and that he cares. She misses it. Out of her busyness and out of the freneticism of her own schedule and her own internal RPMs, she misses the care of the master himself. And she falls into the comparison trap, which we'll talk about in just a moment. But these two things, busyness and comparison, can make it very easy for us to miss God's care. Remember, she asked Jesus, don't you care? And I want to say to you this morning that the speed and the pace of our life, the fullness of our life, can actually have a muting effect, not on God's actual care for us, but on our apprehension of it. That we can run right past him. We can overfill our lives in a way that we miss him almost altogether. Yes, your heavenly destiny is not at stake, but your earthly one is very much at stake. And Jesus is addressing this in you and I, and he's especially addressing this in Martha. Now, if you've been taking this rest challenge seriously that we've been talking about over the last number of weeks, and we're in week 5 of this, if you've been taking that seriously, you have come across this whole idea that busyness can very easily creep in and steal your rest. Have you noticed that? Very easily. It's actually, gravity actually kind of works that way. I like the way that author Peter Lord put this. He said, busyness is not of the devil. Busyness is the devil. I think Eugene Peterson focuses the lens even a little bit better, where he says it this way, busyness and overwork do violence to our souls. Do violence to our souls. That we work, and our souls are dying. Busyness actually has a killing effect on the soul of a person. And so I have to ask this question this morning. It begs to be asked. Rate yourself. How busy are you? How much has busyness got you? Or where are you on the busyness scale? Let's take it on as 1 is you're completely at rest and 10, you're completely amped. Where are you on that scale? Think. On the busyness scale, where are you? Now, as a little gut check, a little honesty, where do you think your spouse would rate you on that? Or your best friends? Somebody with an exterior lens that's looking in, where would they say that you are? It's a little too honest, isn't it? Now, there's another dynamic at work here. And that is the dynamic of comparison. That Mary is quite literally comparing herself with, Martha is quite literally comparing herself with Mary. She's basically going like this. Wait, she's not working as hard as I am working. She's not doing her share. As I said, she's getting bossy with Jesus, and she's in this comparison kind of trap as well, where she's looking at somebody else and they're not doing what she thinks that they're supposed to be doing. And so that actually adds to her amping out. You've heard me say this a number of times, but I think it's a great quote. Our old president, Teddy Roosevelt, said, "Comparison is the thief of joy." Comparison is the thief of joy. And so asking this question, the following question that goes with follow up from the busyness scale, who are you comparing yourself with or to? Who? Think. There's a theologian and Bible teacher that I quite like. His name is Daryl Johnson. I'm never going to be as smart as he is, ever. He has 2 or 3 PhDs. One of them's in physics. I have that many. I love the way that he communicates. I love his passion for Jesus. If I compare myself to him, I stink. If I compare myself to Tony, Tony just has a remarkable pace in life. I am not built like he is. But if I compare myself with him, which I often look on with admiration at him as a friend and as a person, as a coworker, and I admire that. But if I compare myself to him, I'm going down. You know what I'm talking about? Who are you comparing yourself with? Busyness and comparison can very easily cause our eyes to be blinded to the care of God when the Lord just said, "Hey, I'm good with who you are. I don't want you to be like somebody else. Would you just settle in your own skin a little bit? Because this is how I made you." Comparison and busyness. And both of those things can come back and bite us badly and quickly. And so Jesus now addresses this situation. It's a very short story, but it's very poignant. He says to Martha directly, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed. Indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her." Interesting interaction that Jesus has here. He says, worry and fretting have captured you, Martha, that you've jam-packed your life, you've got all these commitments, and you've even committed to really good things. They're just not ultimate things. They're not the best things. And you've put your commitments into this, and you're all stressed out. And look what it's got. Look where it's gotten you. Look what it is doing inside of you. And I think that's something that's really important for us to take a little bit of a, check our emotional oil and say, am I really resting in God? Am I actually trusting that God can manage his universe without my help? Or am I trying to take some of the responsibility and in doing so getting crushed because the universe is just slightly bigger than you and me? Just slightly. And so what's interesting here is that Jesus comes right out and says the message that Ali is actually going to say to us, that fewer things are better. Fewer things are better. One more time. Fewer things are better. Now, you might be thinking, no, Bob. That's just not the way that this works. He who dies with the most toys wins, right? And I like lots of things. But your life does not consist of lots of things. And the American dream sort of sows this idea into us. But the reality is that fewer things help us to focus. Fewer things to hold on to protect, to look after, to covet. And I like the current term that's used of this. I think it's a profound one. That we need to simplify. That we need to buy into simplicity. That is, if you will, less is more. When you have fewer things, you have fewer things to worry about. When you have fewer things, you have more appreciation, or at least you can, if you choose it. But simplifying our lives and choosing simplicity is part of the key to moving into real Sabbath rest. I want to say to you that if your life is full of things and full of commitments and full of that, you could carve out all the time that you want to, but you will not rest. There's too much else going on. And that the Lord is calling us to simplify our lives, to create space for Him. And this is really incessant throughout the entire Bible. But Paul talks about things like this in Philippians chapter 4, where he says, I have learned the secret of what? Of being content. Of being content in any and every situation, with a lot or with a little. I have come to this secret. And there is a secret to that. There's a mystery to that. He says to his spiritual son, Timothy, he says that true godliness, that is living the life that God has really entrusted to you and I, with contentment is itself great wealth. All the wealth that you're chasing, that's not great wealth, but godliness with contentment, that's the real deal. But I think for you and I, we tend to live very crowded lives. Would you agree with that statement? We live very crowded lives. For the most part. Now, some of you, a couple of you will come up to me afterward and say, you know, Bob, my life really isn't all that crowded, and you would be right. I'm just talking about the rest of us po folk. All right? The rest of us people who are engaged, because most of us are in the spot where we are in the place where our lives are overly filled. And what's crowding your life? Ask that question right now. What is crowding my life? What commitments have I made? And what's crowding Jesus out of your life? Or what's crowding Jesus even within your life? And I'll picture this for a second. So you've got a Volkswagen Beetle. Remember those? An old one. And we used to do these things when I was in college where we'd see how many people you could stuff into it. And I looked it up now, and 20 people is the most that anyone has ever stuffed into a Volkswagen Beetle. 20 people. That's a lot of people. But let's just say that you are in the Volkswagen Beetle, and you're stuffed into there with 20 people, and Jesus is in there too. But it's a lot of people. It's a pretty packed out thing. There's not even a lot of room to breathe. And you're like, hey, Jesus. But he can't hear you because he's going through five people just to get the sound waves, just to get to him. And even though Jesus is special and important, he's too crowded with all these other things to even have any movable space within your life to get to you. How about, hey, honey, where are you? Your spouse is out there. You can't get to them either because your life is too crowded. What about your kids? You can't get to them either because your life is too crowded. You've got too many things in the bug. You hear what I'm saying? What is crowding your world? The reality is that Jesus says fewer things are better. And he says that you and I get to choose what we're going to invest in. That we get to choose. That this isn't something that's out for public opinion. We're not living our lives according to public opinion polls. That we're living our lives according to the choices that he has handed us on a silver platter to make. He said, you know, you have a choice in terms of how you're going to live. Martha, you've made your choice in terms of you're busyfying yourself. Mary has made her choice. It's not going to be taken from her. What do you choose? What do you choose? What do you choose? All of these matter. Mary chose the quiet. Martha chose the busy. Mary chose the slowing down. Martha, the speeding up. Mary chose the sit and listen. Martha chose to take responsibility for everyone and everything. Mary chose the calm. Martha chose the worry. The tale of two sisters. The tale of two speeds. The tale of two interactions with Jesus of, if you will, two expressions of religion. This is what this could be. You can be the busy Christian, or you can be the Christian who is settling in because you have a choice. You can be present with Jesus. I love that term. That's another current way of describing this, being present. Have you heard that before? I read Shauna Nyquist's book, Present Over Perfect. It was beautifully written and a total delight to read. If you have a chance, I would recommend that. But it's this idea of being present in the moment where you are, both with God and with the people around you, and actually at some level even with yourself. And Mary is present to Jesus, and Martha, sadly, is not. And that actually is the point here, is that Martha, in her serving Jesus, has simply missed him. Ruth Haley Barton, in her book Sacred Rhythms, tells a story about a time when she had, with her 15-year-old daughter, she had 50 kids over for her 15th birthday. 50. Not 15, 50, 5-0. And she had serious doubts as to whether she could actually really engage with this group of people. But as she did, as they had all of these kids over to their home, and she was actually doing the food and other ones of her daughter's sisters are doing the karaoke and judging the contest and all these different things, she realized all of a sudden that things sort of slowed down. And that she was having a moment where it was a defining moment of figuring out, oh, wait a minute, I don't want to miss this. And this is how she writes it. And pardon me that this is a little bit long, but it's beautifully written, and it says exactly what I'm trying to communicate. She says, as kids were going through the food line and fixing their hamburgers and hot dogs, they were all very polite, but there was one young man whose expression of appreciation was so genuine that I stopped what I was doing and paid attention. He said, thanks so much for doing this, Mrs. Barton. This is so much fun. And I looked up from serving, met his eyes, and said, you're welcome. We really enjoy having you. Well, he paused mid-ketchup, returned my gaze, and said with incredulity, really? As though he was completely unaccustomed to being enjoyed. Completely unaccustomed to being enjoyed. The young man's unguarded response combined disbelief and wonderment so sweetly that I was flooded with awareness and suddenly saw my life in a new way, in a way that I had never seen it before. Something inside of me stood at attention and said, this is my life. This is what it's like to be the way, to be all in the way. Sorry, let me back up for a second. I'm getting so excited I'm not reading the right words here. This is what it's like to be all the way here now rather than always longing for something else. This is my life as it is meant to be lived in God. And a prayer welled up from the depths of my being, a prayer so full of desire that it was barely articulate. She said this, oh God, give me more moments like this. Moments when I am fully present to you and to others in love. One more time. Oh God, give me more moments like this. Moments when I am fully present to you and to others in love. Moments when I am connected with what is purest and most authentic within me and able to respond to your presence in that place. I want to live my life in such a way that there is more of this. Being present to him and present to others in love. This is something that we see in Mary in this. There's a simplicity to it. There's a slowness to it. There's an RPM management, if you will. There's a choice. All of these things matter. I started out this message conceptually in my mind with all the be still passages, and there are many of them in the Bible. Because I believe that the Lord is calling us into a kind of stillness, but as I got further into this and I looked once again in a fresh way with some fresh eyes at these two women, I was profoundly struck with that one actually gets to be still and the other one doesn't. And the quality of life is drastically different. And the choice is there before both of us, before all of us. I like the way that Psalm 37 says this, just to get this discussion going. Be quiet or be still before the Lord and wait for him. Psalm 46:10, the one that you probably know, be still and know that I am God. That the human spirit needs this stillness to have balance. That we need to, if we're a high revving personality, you're also going to need those times when your RPMs are very low. You might think, well, Bob, I'll die if I do that. You might. But you'll live after that in a very significant way. I rev high. As we've started this series and I've carved out this time every week to spend pretty much 24 hours doing this, I'm finding that my soul is revving, that busyness I'm carrying around with me rather than shedding it. And the Lord is challenging me with that. But he's challenging all of us with this. So what to do? How do you do this? Because it's like, well, okay, great, Bob, but how do you even make a start? Well, let me start out of the gate with the most threatening suggestion so far. I want to challenge you to do a digital fast. That is to fast from digital technology. That is, turn off your phone. Not silence your phone, turn it off. Now, some of you, this might be like, I don't know. Could I even do that? There's a beautiful commercial, I think it was AT&T, a number of years ago, where, you know, this guy is sort of, you know, doing a video summary. He's like, we've been off of the internet for 1 hour, and we think we're doing okay, and then it goes to 5 hours. We're 5 hours off of the internet, and we're just really having a hard time. And then, you know, it goes to like 8 hours or 10 hours. And he's like, we can't handle it anymore. And it was this whole idea of that we are so plugged in that we don't know how to unplug. And so I want to challenge you to unplug from social media, to unplug from texting, to unplug and to unplug for a concerted amount of time. And you will experience DTs. You will experience withdrawals. And it's okay. You will get over it. A digital fast. Just let your imagination go with that one. I think you get what I'm saying. Secondly, and again, I'm just getting us going. I want to say that it would be good for you to just get outside and take a walk. But not walk fast, not walk for exercise, just walk. Because for one, your skin needs some contact with the sun's rays to be a healthy person. It does. And if you walk a little bit, you'll find a different kind of rhythm because you can walk in a hurry, but if you really make it a point not to, it will slow you your whole life down. A third thing to suggest in this is to practice some breathing exercises. I know this sounds dorky, but at some level, when I'm revving, sometimes I just have to take some very focused breaths and breathe out the things that I'm stressing on. And I breathe in the Spirit and I breathe out these things that I'm stressing on. Breathe in the Spirit and breathe out the things that I'm stressing on. And I hand these things over to the Lord. And honestly, your choice, and the neuroscience in this is actually kind of profound, that your amygdala, the fight or flight mechanism, the place where the fight and flight is in your brain, that is actually quite affected by your breathing. And so if you start heating up, but you make the choice to start regulating your breathing, you can take it down. You can change your rhythm by doing so. But your breath is the starting place. It's kind of incredible, but it's a beautiful thing, and it's the Lord's the one that gave it, it's the breath. And then here's the here's the fourth one, and I won't go on because there's a lot of these that I could suggest. But Becky and I learned this thing called hugging to relax. If you're married, if you're not married, this isn't very helpful. But what we do is Becky and I will just hug and we'll hold on to each other, but not leaning into each other or leaning away from each other. We'll just hug. And interestingly enough, as you're holding on to your spouse in this whole thing, and you become instantly aware of how much revving is going on in your own soul. It's crazy. And as you hold on to each other and you notice that your breathing is up, that your stress is up, you are acutely aware of all these different things, and then you can just start sort of shutting them down. And again, Beck and I do this often because it really matters. And honestly, then we start talking after that and we really are connected. It's goofy. But again, I'm just trying to get you on the playing field here. If you're single, don't do this. Not helpful. All of this to say that God is giving you and I an invitation. And we have to decide whether we're going to take it or we're not. The Lord says, come to me and I'll give you rest. Keep coming to me and I'll keep giving you rest. Lower your RPMs. What are you today learning from Mary and Martha? Do you relate to who more, Mary or Martha? What about these women do you relate to? There's some questions I have up here just to get us started. If you could go to the first one. You know, what would your life look like uncluttered, unhurried, and simpler? What might your life look like? When I think about this, I think, how many t-shirts I could get rid of in my closet to start? I mean, I have to have 50 t-shirts. I wear 5 or 6 of them, and then they get washed, and all the rest of them can be disposed of to somebody else that might wear them. Secondly, what things or commitments whatever that means. I wrote these, so yeah, I just obviously didn't proof it very well. But what kind of things or commitments do you have in your life that are non-essentials that can be taken off of the grid? What needs to go? Ask yourself these things. And then lastly, when can you carve out time to slow down, settle down, and be still or stiller and rest? Again, we're in this series not so that I can hear myself talk. I hear myself talk all the time because I talk all the time. But the reality is, I'm saying these things to you because I believe that God is saying these things to us. And so this isn't trivial to me even a little bit. And I'm not cavalier about this. I believe that if we get this, it will have a meaningful daily, weekly, monthly, across the span of an entire life impact. And I believe it's worth it. It's so worth it to God that he pre-programmed into a society that he set up for the people of Israel. He pre-programmed that 1/7 of their time was militantly just set aside for rest. It was that important. And it isn't American. This is Kingdom of Heaven stuff. So what will you do? Let's stand.